Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Lots of empowering information. I can promise you by the end of this program, you're going to have about 50 different topics and pieces of information that can give you greater insight about life, aging, disease. It's all here. One day a week, we take a program, and it's called Talk Back, an opportunity for people in the audience anywhere in Canada and the United States to call in, ask questions, share their comments, thoughts, points of view. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We also want to mention that there are a lot of people who listen by telephone because, quite simply, they're not by a radio. So that's fine, or a computer. In fact, all over the New York area, we have taxi drivers who listen over, put their phone on, put it on speaker, and listen in. Those two numbers where you can always reach out and hear what I'm saying, 712-432-7231. Again, 712-432-7231 or 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456. Now today, I'm going to get into the latest on how we can slow down our brain aging. I'll be sharing some unique insights from William Falloon of Life Extension. I'm going to also talk about why oxygen, when a person has had a stroke, is so important to protect the brain tissue. Also, for those of you who are using hormone replacement therapy, it raises the ovarian cancer risk. I'll explain all that. Also, inhaling silver nanoparticles results in protection against pneumonia. You'll get the latest on that. Lots on health and healing. Then we're going to talk about how Big Pharma has influenced your doctor. You may not know it. In fact, I'll bet you don't know it. Martha Rosenberg and my own commentary on that. Also today, why are American hospitals charging up to $800 for a 44-cent bag of salt water? You heard me right. $800, they charge you, their cost, 44 pennies. I'll get into that. And there's newly released documents that reveal that livestock are getting antibiotics that put you at high risk if you eat that flesh. And from our public health segment, a study reveals children are being vaccinated with toxic levels of aluminum causing neurological damage and even autism. We'll share the latest on that. And from our issues area today, How Inequality Hollows Out the Soul by Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett from the New York Times. And I'm going to start with that because I'd like for you to think about this and then call in. I'd like to hear your perspective. And here is what they say. And I'll just quote it. It's a moderate article. I'm only going to give you a couple paragraphs. One of the well-known costs of inequality is that people withdraw from community life and are less likely to feel that they can trust others. This is partly a reflection of the way status anxiety makes us all more worried about how we're valued by others. Now that we can compare robust data from different countries, we can see not only what we knew intuitively, that inequality is diverse and socially corrosive, but that it also damages an individual's psyche. Our tendency to equate outward wealth with inner worth involves deep psychological responses, feelings of dominance or subordination, superiority or inferiority. This affects the way we see and treat one another. A few years ago, an article was published by Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett of the New York Times that showed in developed countries, major and minor mental illness were three times, that's 300%, as common in societies where there were bigger income differences between rich and poor. In other words, an American is likely to know three times as many people with a depression or anxiety problem as someone in Japan or Germany. and that these differences are not a matter of awareness, definitions, or access to treatment. It's about how you are perceived. And then they went into this particular study, and they found what is called the dominance behavioral system. And what it means is this, in lay language, that we have evolved a large body of evidence, biological, behavioral, and self-reported accounts, that shows that how we rank socially on an artificial hierarchy determines how we feel about ourselves. One brain imaging study discovered that there are particular areas of the brain and neural mechanisms dedicated to processing social rank. And hence, as Ms. Johnson concludes, that psychiatric conditions like mania and narcissism are related to our striving for status and dominance, while others, disorders, anxiety, and depression may involve responses to the experience of subordination. And therefore, how do we cope with social hierarchies that contribute to antisocial personality conditions? So here is the issue. In our society today, if you look at television, you will see so many programs that are based upon one group winning, everyone else losing. If you win, you're given outrageous amounts of attention and rewards. If you lose, you're punished. To see if this was as accurate as this article pretends it is, I decided to take a few hours out of filming, and I'm only about 7-8 days away from completing this long filming process. The film itself you'll have a chance to see in August. And there's actually three films that I'm doing in one, but the big one is on poverty. In any case, I found it was true when I was filming over 1,000 people in the last 5 years of this film. Those who at one time had social standing, who maybe that was just being a good member of their community and their church and a person that just went to work every day, didn't stand out in any particular way, but was always consistent. When their companies were sold or they no longer had income to have the same lifestyle, they withdrew. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken with who said they don't socialize anymore. They don't even go out in public the way they used to because they don't want people seeing them because they feel ashamed or embarrassed because they no longer are able to be responsible to themselves or have a lifestyle. Or especially if they're underwater losing their home, as many are. And by the way, that's a big deal today. And we're not even discussing that anywhere. For example, this is from housingwire.com. Quote, 1 in 5 homeowners drowning. Now, how many people is that? Well, that's 9.3 million U.S. residential properties are underwater. Times four. So you're dealing with a very high level. Over 35 million Americans, closer to 40 million Americans, are fearful that they will lose the home they live in. They'll join another 30 million Americans who've already lost their home. Well, now you no longer have your standing in that community. Quote, Reality Track released its U.S. home equity and underwater report, which shows that 9.3 million U.S. residents residential properties were deeply underwater. That's 1 in 5 of all property owners in the United States. And deeply underwater is defined as worth at least 25% less than the combined loan secured for the property. So you're talking about an awful lot of people, and yet it's not discussed. Well, how does that make you feel when you lose your job, when you no longer, even when you age? That's another thing. Because when you have youth and vitality and vigor and energy galore, and you're exploring life and yourself and your place in it, that changes when you're older and you no longer find things as exciting, you're no longer as energetic, you kind of act your age, which is not a good thing, but also you don't see yourself when you look in the mirror the way you did when you were younger. You see the gray hairs, the wrinkles, the sags, the bags, the droopiness, and now that also changes how we feel in a society. I remember this a few years ago when there was a guy who was found still going discoing, and he was in his 40s. And they thought that was a very weird thing. Why are you discoing? You're over 40 years old. And he said, because I enjoy dancing. I enjoy the music. I enjoy socializing. Well, They thought that was odd. Odd? So you should do what 40-year-olds do? Or 50-year-olds or 60? So we're supposed to do something different every time we hit a 10-year mark in our aging? We can no longer do things we once did because it wouldn't be acting our age? So you start looking at all the ways we in our society chop and dice people and put them into categories. How are we supposed to feel? All of this can make a difference. And then we're not the ones, let's say, one of the 40 million Americans who are making out fine now. We're one of the ones who are not, the 270 million Americans who are not doing fine. That's what this is talking about. Your thoughts. What do you think all this means in our society? Because all we do is we focus upon the get yours while you can, get ahead, look at the rewards, and if you're not, you're a loser and go home. Wow, such negativity. Our number to call in to share your points of view on this later in the program, 888-874-4888. Now, to our health and nutrition segment. I have advocated for a long time that any time there is a stroke, even as long as 7 years after a stroke, get hyperbaric oxygen therapy because it can protect parts of the brain and actually cause the brain to get rejuvenated. This is from Science Daily. This is mainstream science. Here's what it has to say. And this was at the Society of Neuroscience at their annual meeting. Quote, scientists have countered findings of previous clinical trials by showing that giving supplemental oxygen in animals during a stroke can reduce damage to the brain tissue surrounding the clot. The timing of the delivery is 100% oxygen, either by mask or hyperbaric chamber, is critical to achieving the benefit. So, there they have it, finally. Decades after I've been telling people, get hyperbaric, and now they're finally acknowledging it, it does work. Quote, from the study, hyperbaric oxygen during stroke shows the promise of being an effective tool. You bet it is. We could be saving an awful lot of people. Remember, stroke is the third leading cause of death in the United States, and this is an easy-to-do and safe process. Millions of American women every day take hormone replacement therapy. Now, if you're trying to rebalance your hormones, completely legitimate, then you should do it through lifestyle, like exercise every day, taking the master hormone stimulator, DHEA, and generally 15 to 20 milligrams. That's the best way of doing it because exercising stimulates hormones and rebalances them. But you have to be consistent, and it has to be a combination of either aerobic, power walking, biking, jogging, or at least 5 days a week aerobic and 4 to 5 days a week of resistance exercise. Then your diet is all important. And there are lots of nutrients we discuss repeatedly. Having them on a regular basis can help, like ginseng makes a big difference, and Gota Cola, and Dong Quai, and Vitex. This is the latest on this subject. Quote from S.L. Baker, cancer of the ovary is rarely found early, and by the time it's discovered, the disease has frequently spread. So prevention is the most important way to fight this frequently deadly malignancy. Unfortunately, new research shows a medical treatment, hormone replacement therapy, which was hyped for decades as a way to prevent health problems in women while boosting libido and moods, can cause ovarian cancer. By the way, this study is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and it concludes that hormone replacement therapy can trigger ovarian cancer, and it's very strong in its condemnation. Quote, in fact, the increased risk of ovarian cancer persists regardless of duration of use, formulations, the dose of estrogen taken, the prescription regime, hormone replacement therapy, or the route administered by mouth or patch. Now, by the way, that's very important, and why? Because hormone replacement therapy is still being advertised and prescribed and pushed as just fine for most women, short-term, even though previous research has linked to it, health problems ranging from breast cancer and dementia to strokes. Bottom line, don't use any of the hormone replacement therapies unless it's all natural. You increase your risk tremendously. Most of the people in this audience, I'm sure, have heard of colloidal silver. And if a person's coming down with strep, staph, cold, flu, not a bad idea to include it. Also, along with olive leaf extract and some of the really important natural antibiotic and antiviral solutions. Here's the latest from David Gutris. Silver-based nanoparticles may prove the most effective method yet of delivering pneumonia medications, according to a study conducted at Washington University School of Medicine and the University of Akron, Ohio, and presented at the International Conference on American Thoracic Society. Researchers, in this case, saw that it was the aerosoled nanoparticles once a day that made an enormous difference in this particular one. So I believe that more medicine will start to use the nano silver therapies to get greater delivery into the body. Olive leaf, it's good, about 1,000 milligrams is the dose range you need. We've known for a long time that olive leaf has been used for thousands of years. It originated in ancient Egypt. The olive leaf was used by many different physicians and healers. In fact, it has been shown to help with malaria, even in its final stages. But if you live as many people do today, the likelihood is you're going to get colds and flu, and then olive leaf should be considered. Why? Even though it has a bitter compound, it is that bitter compound which helps fight disease. And that bitter compound has been shown to fight off colds and flu, treat yeast infections, viral infections, especially herpes, Epstein-Barr and shingles, heart conditions, lower the bad cholesterol, and you can get olive leaf extract. And if you have AIDS-defining illnesses, hepatitis, strong viral activity, there is no virus I know that cannot be impacted in the right way with olive leaf extract. And so therefore, I would definitely use olive leaf extract. And I would use it along with vitamin D3, grapeseed extract, garlic, onion, and vitamin C and quercetin for the best results. There are two distinct differences in how the government responds to the question, are vaccines safe when it comes to thimerosal or mercury? One section of government, the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Service, advocates vaccines and says they're completely safe and there's no evidence of harm. The other side of government, the government agencies that actually pay the billions of dollars to people who've been injured, including defining autism spectrum disorders from vaccine injury. They have all the court documents. They have all the information there. So you have yes, it does cause autism and other damage, and the other agencies, no, it doesn't. Well, one is under the absolute control of the pharmaceutical industry. The other is not. This is just the latest. This was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Toxicology. Here is the title of the study. Quote, a mitochondrial dysfunction, impaired oxidative reduction activity, degeneration and death in human neuron and fetal cells induced by low-level exposure to thimerosal and other metal compounds. What this study shows is that mercury, the preservative used in vaccines, will affect brain and cause pathologies, including autism spectrum disorder. And we were told that thimerosal was taken out of vaccines. Some, that's true, but it's still in others, and especially in the flu vaccine. And in this particular study, it actually showed the consequence to the brain. So, just understand that There are studies. There are court outcomes. I've interviewed the people, including medical doctors, who can prove that mercury in vaccines is neurologically damaging. Let's say that you have cancer or arthritis, and you're looking for something that will be different and work. Well, how about graviola? Maybe you don't know it by that name. Well, how about Annona? Don't know that name either? Well, I'll bet all the people in this audience who come from the tropics know it. Soursop. Maybe pawpaw. It's a fruit. They use the fruit, the leaves, the bark, the roots have all been used as sedatives in folk medicine. But native South American healers use the tree to heal liver, asthma, heart problems, as well as arthritis. Research on soursop. And by the way, soursop, there's a photograph taken back in the 1990s when we took our team, the Natural Living Running and Walking Team, to Jamaica to do the first Jamaica marathon. And I always liked doing the first marathons. I did the first London marathon, the first L.A. marathon where I won a gold, San Francisco, Marine Corps, Montreal. I've been doing a waterfront, Jersey Shore. I've done all these over 60 marathons, about 25 New York marathons, but I really enjoy doing a first, so I thought this would be a lot of fun. But they had never done it, and they didn't plan it right. And they had this big hill and right in the middle of it, and everyone's saying, what's this? You don't put a hill right in the middle of a marathon. I'm talking about a tall one where you could oversee a lot of Montego Bay. But anyhow, and they didn't have water for us, and they forgot that it was right in the middle of the rain season, so the streets were flooded. We actually, at one point, were running down a street, and suddenly we had water up to our waist and everything floating through it. But at the end of the race, Sam Skinner won a gold, I won a gold, and you'll see a photograph of it. And there's another photograph. I got a whole giant piece of fruit in my hand. That's a soursop. It tastes like a vanilla custard. It's really delicious. In any case, it's really medicinal, and it helps with a lot of different conditions. Well, there was a study, the first study I'm aware of, on graviola that was conducted in 1976 by the National Cancer Institute. And the findings reported the leaves of the graviola plant were effective in destroying malignant cancer cells. Tests at Purdue University on cancer cells of prostate, pancreas, and lungs have all been done and showed positive effects. In fact, soursop or graviola killed colon cancer cells better than a chemotherapy drug called adriamycin. In fact, the results were 10,000 times stronger than chemotherapy. And unlike chemotherapy, graviola has no damaging side effects, except for the carcinogenic cells. This means that there will likely be no hair loss, no nausea. And they use it in other countries, mainly the seeds, to help eliminate parasites. And in Guyana, the leaves are used as both a sedative and a heart tonic, and Brazilians drink graviola tea for relief of liver problems. And then they also use the oil from the seeds to relieve arthritis and rheumatism. And in Jamaica and the West Indies, the fruit is eaten to reduce fevers and treat diarrhea. So just keep that in mind. If you get sick and you're looking for other things that could help, that could help. Now, if you have diabetes and you'd like to lower that risk, greater magnesium intake can help that. Researchers from Japan published in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition found that the higher the magnesium level, the lower risk of developing type 2 diabetes. This was done at Osaka University Graduate School of Medicine. And so keep in mind, we're talking about maybe 800 to 1,000 milligrams. This is from the study. Quote, to our knowledge, no study has examined the association between magnesium intake and the risk of diabetes. And then they went on to talk about what an important factor it is. So we got millions, tens of millions of people with diabetic conditions. Take your magnesium. And finally, researchers study cinnamon extracts. The U.S. Department of Agriculture took a look at all the different types of cinnamon out there, which is very high in antioxidants, and found that it could reduce the risk of diabetes and heart disease. Working in cooperation with the Beltsville Human Nutrition Center, and which is operated by the USDA's Agriculture Research Services, that's where they did. So here's a suggestion. Try putting some cinnamon in your smoothie. It'll make a big difference in your health. All right? Simple, easy, no big deal. I'm Gary Nall. Now for our kind of classroom on the air. We'll take a little more time, and then I'm going to take your calls. And I'd like to hear from you at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Right after this. I believe that we're coming awful close to being able to stop in its tracks Alzheimer's, stroke, and age-related cognitive impairment. The term for this reversible disorder is called hypoperfusion. Now, it means an inadequate supply of blood to a body part. Hypoperfusion of the brain occurs in response to reduced blood flow. The result of hypoperfusion is a series of harmful changes that severely diminish neurological function. We have known for a long time that structural changes that adversely impact the aging brain preceding the structural deterioration, however, is a decline in the microvascular blood flow. And what researchers are increasingly recognizing is the most significant part of human aging, from obstructions to cerebral blood flow, that result in chronic hyperperfusion, and this in turn sets your cells at risk of dying, being altered, oxidative stress. And that in turn creates all this neurological cascade that can manifest in memory loss, depression, cognitive dysfunction. The term, the long-term impact of hyperperfusion, you're going to be at greater risk of stroke, vascular dementia, and Alzheimer's. Now, this audience knows that you must have protection against hyperperfusion. And you can't underestimate, however, the fragile nature of our aging circulatory structures. So I'm interested in sharing with this audience the neurodegenerative diseases that are going to happen if we don't do something right away. First and foremost, don't let your brain shrink. Normal aging is associated with diminished blood flow to the brain. This pathology is known as hypoperfusion and causes cell injury and death. Hypertension, which is high blood pressure, accelerates brain atrophy in humans. It does this by damaging the cerebral circulatory system to a point that it cannot adequately transport blood. Blood vessels damaged by hypertension lose their ability to nourish cells, which can result in chronic hyperperfusion and loss of brain function. When you have a combination of hypertension, which is high blood pressure, and hyperperfusion, then you're going to end up with a smaller brain volume. And once the cerebrovascular is damaged, lowering blood pressure will not reverse brain shrinkage, and shrinking may continue despite successful blood pressure control. The reason is that deformed and dysfunctional cerebral arteries may require higher blood pressure to avoid hyperperfusion. In other words, in some people with cerebrovascular damage, high blood pressure may be needed to squeeze blood into the brain. This squeezing process results in additional blood vessel damage and increased stroke risk. And then hyperperfusion is no longer a controversial aspect. It is associated with Alzheimer's. Disruptive blood flow is evident when Alzheimer's manifests in its initial stages, mild cognitive impairment, all the way to full-blown dementia. So what we have to know is we've got to help stop the metabolic syndrome that will increase this whole process. We've got to get our blood sugar under control. And all this is because of these tiny little capillaries. With each heartbeat, blood is thrust into the arteries that branch into the small arterioles that branch into further capillaries where they deliver oxygen and nutrients to cells. Even medically educated individuals forget just how tiny capillaries that oxygenate our neurons really are. A typical red blood cell is 6 to 10 micrometers, but capillary diameter is only 8 to 10 micrometers on average. Capillaries are so narrow that red blood cells often have to bend their shape to squeeze through them. Platelets are usually 2 to 4 micrometers, but anything that causes abnormal platelet clumping, which is thrombosis, creates a mass that cannot fit through thread-like capillaries. This helps explain how precarious our aging cerebral vascular system is and how readily hypoperfusion develops via disrupted capillary beds. Not only are capillaries tiny, but they are also extremely delicate. Instead of the tough layers that make up our arteries, capillaries consist only of a single layer of endothelial cells lying on a basement of membrane. Now, hypertension destroys fragile capillaries, leaving in its wake a hyperperfused region of the brain, often described as cerebral perfusion deficits. And capillaries surround neurons and diffuse oxygen and nutrients into them. Any interruption to capillary blood flow has the potential to injure or kill neurons. And this is why hyperperfusion may be prevented or reversed if we are to preserve our cognitive integrity. And abnormal platelet aggregation increases as humans age, which explains why thrombosis is increasing as a threat to our aging process. So also, by the way, when you have this occurring, your risk factors in the blood that cause brain vasculature to become blocked are homocysteine, fibrinogen, C-reactive protein, triglycerides, homocysteine. They all create havoc at the capillary level, and that's what we don't want. They also create inflammation that damages the delicate endothelium. So those people who are cavalier about all this, remember, you put yourself at risk. You can prevent progression to senility. You can prevent a lot of brain aging. You can put it all together for yourself. Now, what is the solution, all right? First, exercise is great. Secondly, stop with all the meat and the dairy, because that's what causes your red blood cells to aggregate and clump together. Get active. Liquefy a lot. You're probably not drinking enough of healthy juices and clean water. Also, brain injuries are common. I definitely suggest omega-3 fatty acids, either vegan or from fish, generally at 1,500 milligrams. Vinpocetin, vin, V-I-N, po, P-O, cetin, C-E-T-I-N-E, generally at 10 to 15 milligrams. Ginkgo biloba, generally 100 to 150 milligrams. Alpha-lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid, 300 to 600 milligrams. Acetyl, A-C-E-T-Y-L, carnitine, carn, C-A-R-N, itine, I-T-I-N-E, 1,000 milligrams. Hyperazine A, H-U-P-E-R-Z-I-N-E, A, 100 micrograms. N-acetylcysteine, that's N-acetylcysteine, C-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E, 500 milligrams. These will make a difference, and this way you won't be suffering the way others would. And also I would add in there some green tea, because it inhibits hyperperfusion. The cerebral hyperperfusion results in oxidative stress that leads to neurodegenerative disease, and antioxidants help protect that. And green tea is high dose, is very beneficial for that. So that's our classroom on the air today, saving and protecting our brain. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment to take your calls on the issues that are important to you. Our number is 888-874-4888, and the rest of the program will be devoted to your input. And let me mention also, we're syndicated all over the world and stations all over the United States, but one of the sister stations, WBAI, where I've been on for 37 years at noon, I'm going to have an in-depth conversation Monday evening, 8 p.m. on the Progressive, following the Progressive Commentary Hour, to explain the future of Pacifica, the future of BAI, and what I believe is necessary to help that station have another day, to be able to serve its many and diverse listeners and maintain or even to regain its sense of significance that it once held in American broadcasting. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. For those of you who turn on the dial and don't find me there, you can always turn on the dial of the telephone and you can get me there. Let me give you the two phone numbers that you can always reach out and I'll be there. 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456 and 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. And just 2 days ago, we had 50,000 minutes in one program, people listening over the phone. So it's a convenient tool. Just to restate that, because my engineers tell me a lot of people are calling saying, when are you going to have this discussion? Monday evening, 8 p.m., go to the Progressive Commentary Hour, or you can call either of those two numbers, and you can hear my one-hour discussion about Pacifica. Real quick, why are American hospitals charging up to $800 for a 44-cent bag of salt water? This is from Melissa Melton. Quote, horror stories abound about hospitals charging people ridiculous sums of money in America for something as cheap and plentiful as aspirin. This is nothing new, and it's something that's really sad. But just this month, a guy posted a bill for an appendectomy. And because he was charged a stomach-churning $55,000 for a simple procedure, an amount that would likely induce appendicitis if the guy hadn't already had his appendix taken out. Two thoughts crossed my mind when I saw this. That's insanely outlandish, and only in America could such an insanely outlandish thing be possible. So I decided to do some research on this. Are hospitals really charging Americans up to $800 for one of the most abundant resources on the planet and something that ultimately costs so little? Yes, it turns out. Nina Bernstein of the New York Times went in search of the same thing a few months ago and found that the average intravenous bag of sterile salt water costs somewhere between 44 cents and a whole dollar to produce, government based on government figures. And yet they're charging 200 times markup, but it can go to 1,000 times the official cost. So that's it. But they're also now charging $25 for one single aspirin in hospitals. And why are they doing this? Because they can. Because no one's challenging them. The doctor's not challenged. The nurses aren't challenging. The unions aren't challenging them. No one's challenging them. So everybody's feeding at that trough, so they'll charge anything they can, and they do. Unless we start to stay healthy and look for natural and alternative ways, seek out those holistic practitioners. Look, you have over 60,000 chiropractors, and probably 20% of them are holistically minded, called the mixed. You have homeopaths, naturopaths, who are board certified with outstanding reputations. You have holistic dentists like Dr. Elmira Gadol in New York and Dr. Jay Durek and others. And you have holistic medical doctors, many holistic nurses. Plus you have nutrition counselors, holistic dietitians, life coaches. We have almost 100,000 people qualified to help us in our journey to staying healthy. So you do have options. Newly disclosed documents reveal livestock antibiotic used by the FDA despite high risk to humans from Natural Resource Defense Council. Quote, the U.S. FDA quietly allowed 30 potentially harmful antibiotics, including 18 rated as high risk to remain on the market as additives in farm and animal feed and water, despite an internal review that raised significant red flags. This was according to research done by the National Resource Defense Council. Here's the deal. My entire career, I've been challenging the FDA, USDA, about cleaning up the food supply and making the food healthier. Big Pharma is bigger and has deep pockets, and they can buy the people. You see a revolving door, someone goes into the commissioner of the FDA or head of USDA right back into their industries and back in. So they win. So do not trust that the food you're eating is safe or healthy. It is neither. Let's now say hello to our first caller, Tim from New Jersey. Hi, Tim. Your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Doing great. Thank you.
Good, good. There was one, I was getting some notes, just a brief before I mention what I wanted to say. You had gone into, because a friend of yours was getting the short-term memory loss, and you gave a list. There was one on there that I wasn't quite sure I got it accurately. Benzenamine? Could you, or something similar to that? Do you remember
the exact spelling for that? I have the protocols. I have all those nutrients and all that list published up on my website, a whole brain healing protocol. Why don't you go to the website, take a look, you know, and be happy to give you that. That, mind you, what I can give the public, I can't always give the dosages,
right?
But I'll give you range. But when I'm giving specific protocols, they'll generally be a little different.
Do you remember what the exact name of that one that sounds like benzenamine was?
No, it's vinpocetin.
Oh, okay.
V as in Victor, I-N-P-O-C-I-E-T-I-N-E. Vinpocetin.
V-I-N-P-O.
C-E-T-I-N-E.
T-I-N-E, okay.
10 to 15 milligrams.
Okay.
Okay. But
and
again, I just published an article. Hold on 1 second. I just published an article on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was how to reverse and prevent cognitive decline. But it's very comprehensive. It's free.
Oh, great. What was the title of that?
Preventing and reversing cognition naturally.
Okay.
The very topic I'm talking about, it's up there in depth.
Okay. Because I have a number of close people close to me, and they're having different degrees of trouble. So I wanted to get everything combined and an outline of this for them.
Sure, I'm happy to help you.
My comment was having to do with the financial situation.
Yes.
Often I hear it mentioned that there's that $32 or so trillion that's been offshored.
Yes.
I came across some data on the internet that said not only is that the case, that these trillions have been offshored and there's no taxes being paid on them, but that is only cash deposits. It doesn't even account for precious metals and everything else, property, real estate, everything else besides cash deposits.
You
are
correct.
It's not even included in that figure.
Wouldn't it make sense if instead of charging these people 35% to declare that profit in the United States, the government could get it and would be a relief to the American taxpayer. If we gave them a amnesty to let them bring all that profit into the United States, use it as they would, they earned it, fine, I have no problem with that. But in return, they pay a one-time tax on that of 20%.
Flat tax.
One flat tax, 20%.
Makes perfect sense.
I mean, wouldn't you, if you were a corporation, rather have, you know, $30 trillion you could use and redo that base, your financial base, then have it stuck outside the United States? So it benefits everyone, especially if we have one-time tax. So we're making several trillion dollars, and that would help us tremendously. Thanks a lot for your call.
Okay, see you.
Jim from New Jersey. Hi, Jim, your turn.
Gary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. My question, Gary, has to do with this, what appears to be an emerging debate about grains and the diet. I've read or heard people in the nutrition field talk about eliminating sugars, high fructose corn syrup, of course, and then grains, as if all grains are the same. So I wanted to get your thoughts, your insights, because I'm a little confused on this.
All right. Well, this is called a differentiation diet. What does this mean? It means that in order to establish a place in the marketplace, they try to differentiate themselves. So they want to be different. And hence, well, we'll get rid of the grains. All right, fine. What proof do you have that that will benefit someone? Well, if you're talking about refined carbohydrates, white rice, and all the other processed white flour products, and white sugar, I would agree with that. But they have to look at all the minerals, the quality of the fibers, the quality of the amino acids that are in whole, unrefined, natural, organic grains. And those are completely different. Now, to put this to the test, I did a series of clinical studies. And these were a total of 47 studies. The latest we just did a couple of months ago. And some had as many as 1,000 people in them. But all of them were the same, meaning you give a diet that is based upon plants and no animal products, no dairy, no sugars, no meats, no fish. Instead, you give grains, whole grains, and legumes or pulses, soybeans, black beans, navy beans, butter beans, nuts and seeds, root vegetables, starchy vegetables like rutabaga, parsnips, turnips, and herbs and salad greens, juices, and natural sweeteners. That's what you give. And we found that without exception, more than 40,000 people were able to be energized, improve their health, and have no problems. That's the difference. They have not done these studies. They don't have a background in clinical nutrition or nutritional biochemistry. And unfortunately, if you're willing to make all kinds of radicalized claims, you can get a lot of attention. And that's what people do today. But put to the test of time, they're incomplete. They're self-limiting. Hope that answers your question.
It does, Gary. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All the best to you, Jim. Let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. You know, I've often mentioned to your audience that you bring things up, and then 4 or 5 years later, they come true. And just about every single thing you've predicted has actually happened. I got an article today from Lizzie Bennett about the fact that we had better hurry up and get out there and start stocking up on food, as food shortages and price hikes are coming before this year ends. For instance, California is in the middle of a drought so severe that domestic supplies may be cut in a matter of weeks. I just spoke to someone that I know in California, and they said that they're actually measuring water meters to see if people are using too much water, and they're issuing summonses if they're using too much water. Now, California produces a massive amount of the food consumed in the United States. Then the extreme cold in the United States has killed livestock in the hundreds of thousands. Anyone who lives in the northern states, Minnesota, dropping down to minus 30 to minus 50 degrees, wildlife and livestock are just freezing to death. And Florida farmers are looking at massive losses from cold weather, not just from ruining citrus crops, but squash, cucumbers, and herbs. And wheat growth in Texas is stunted by the continuing cold weather. They've never had weather this cold. The fishing industry in Indonesia has taken a hit because of bad weather. Peru, Venezuela, Bolivia all had rainfall heavy enough to flood fields and rot their crops. And volcanic eruptions in Ecuador are creating problems due to cattle ingesting ash with their feed, leading to a slow and painful death. One of my patients is from Australia. Now, they've been in drought for years, and it's affecting their cattle and agricultural production. This woman told me today that farmers have to go out and shoot their livestock, and often then they shoot themselves because there's no livelihood there anymore, especially in the agricultural business. Rice production in China has been affected by record low temperatures, and large parts of the United Kingdom are underwater. We don't see any of this in the news, Gary. We never hear about stuff like this. So this means that the food production for the rest of this year is going to be so severely affected that the prices are going to go sky high. And you told us more than 4 years ago that we had to start stocking up on our foods, especially non-perishable things like our grains and beans and things like that. So,
all right, let me address this. Yes, there is a problem, but it will be felt overseas before it is felt here, because many of the products that are having a difficult time are exported to other countries. For example, when Russia had its enormous heat waves due to global warming and they lost about half of their wheat crop, that didn't affect the Russian people as much as it affected the countries that had bought contracts of that in poor areas where people are literally starving to death. And 1 billion people, that's with a B, 1/7 of the world's population, is food scarce, meaning they don't have adequate nutrition and they will die. What it means in the United States is, yes, we will see all forms of limitations in growing. When you have enormous flooding, the root systems die, or you get seeds washed away, because most seeds are only planted about a quarter to a half inch under the soil. You have repeated heavy rainfall, it's going to wash them out. You also have a lot of crops, including corn, that require a certain degrees of temperature, cooler at night, warm in the day, but you have too great a fluctuation, it'll stunt the corn. You have a lot of fruit that are coming into season, but they're not fully ripened, and they're not the full size. Also because you don't have full pollination. When you don't have full pollination, what you're going to have is you're going to have maybe as much as a third of your fields not blossom because they don't have pollination. And a third of all American crops, all foods we grow, are requiring bees, but we've been using these nicotinoids and these pesticides that destroy them. Whereas organic beekeeping, you don't have a colony collapse. In fact, at this time of year, even in Florida, I see that my bees are fed honey, raw organic honey, every day because you don't have the blossoms. You think, yeah, well, it's warm and it's got green palm trees. That's correct. But they have to have something that they can eat, and then they don't. Then they fly away, and then you have the loss of a colony. I had the same hive for 19 years. Every day they get a cup, whole cup, of raw organic honey, and you just see thousands of them there eating it. People don't know all this. They don't know about this. So what will happen is this. We will have some products in the United States that will go for higher prices because it'll simply be less of them, like oranges. So orange juice will go up. Grapefruit juice will go up in price, but you'll still have it, because it's never where everything is destroyed. Also, we have the advantage of diversity. So where product can be grown in parts of Florida, southern Florida, but not northern Florida, you'll have things grown in California that will not be affected. So you'll have crop. You won't have as much. But if you walk down any American street and you went into any of the stores or fruit and vegetable markets, you're going to see everything you would normally see. And also, these vendors, they're getting stuff in our winter from South Africa, where it's their summer, or other countries. In Chile right now, peaches, nectarines, plums, apricots are coming from Chile. Now, my hope is people would buy organic, but at least they will have it. And that is the benefit of worldwide trade in foods. But here's my final thought. Will it get a lot worse? And the answer is, it is inevitable that it will get worse. I predict that within the next 5 years, unless something changes, based upon the ferocity of the winter and the heat and dryness of the summer, both of which are caused by the same phenomena, you will see probably 20% of the food in the United States, or the ground where it is normally grown, unable to do so. Water will be gone, wells will be dried, aquifers will be too low, and farms will simply close up. I believe that we're going to see a massive real estate bubble crash in California, New Mexico, Nevada, because they're extremely vulnerable, Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, Georgia, Northern Florida. Not now, but California certainly is happening, but you're going to see this happen because they've been living in denial. And you have to look for the truth, then you find it. And when I'm driving up a road, when I'm driving through Oklahoma or Nevada or any of these states, I'm seeing thousands of places for sale. You talk with a local farmer, they say, well, you know, we don't have the water anymore. If we don't have the water, we can't irrigate these trees, or we can't irrigate those fields, or there's not enough rain for the grass to grow. As a result, we can't keep our herds at the right weight. So we had to thin our herds or eliminate our herds. And as you mentioned, some of the severe weather changes were so radical when the weather dropped 50 degrees in one day, it caused thousands of cows and hundreds on just one farm up in Montana of these livestock to die in just one day. You're going to see more of that. So the smart person, in my opinion, should do the following. Start looking at storing those non-perishables, legumes, beans, grains, and you can store those safely, unless it's boiling hot, but you can store them for 6 to 10 years. So when the time comes where there may be a shortage, you'll be fine. And in the interim, eat them as you will. And you, when you buy in bulk, you save money. So that would be my suggestion. Okay?
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening in. And Monday evening, 8 p.m., a conversation on the future of WBAI, one of our important sister stations, and a look for solutions, a look for understanding what is occurring so that we're all on board together. You can go to Progressive Radio Network to listen in. Have a nice day.